Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us on Queensberry Rules Radio once more. I'm Patrick Connor of QueensberryRules.com. And also here with me, as usual, I have James Foley of BadLeftHook.com. James.
Patrick.
Have you recovered from that fucking bitch slapping that Steve Smoger applied the other night?
I've watched it about 500 times. Loved it.
That was pretty crazy stuff.
That was amazing. That was awesome.
Oh, man.
You know, there's people like, so unprofessional. Who cares?
I thought it was an absolutely terrible outing by Smoger, but it was funny.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
If I'm looking at it in a
objective,
if
serious,
I'm looking
serious.
At it in the context, yeah, if I'm, you know, being serious about it and going, was it fair? Was it a good outing? No, it wasn't a good outing, but it was pretty hilarious.
It was fun to watch. And just
another part of
the whole circus that happened on Saturday night.
I had so much shit ready for this show today. I was going to be talking so much shit about Bernard Hopkins and Carl Marat, how it was a horrible fight, and, you know, how Bernard Hopkins needs to retire, like, yesterday. And, surprisingly, it wound up being a decent fight. I mean, I think just about everybody was surprised by that.
Yeah, I didn't see it coming as far as being that, you know, entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think if you're holding it up to a standard of kind of like a fight of the year standard or whatever, it didn't reach that type of level. But at the same time, you know, at the very least, for a Bernard Hopkins fight, it was pretty solid.
Yeah, man, I mean, I really enjoyed it more than a lot of fights recently. I mean, it wasn't as, like, dramatic, I guess, Provodnikov-Alvarado fight last weekend, but in terms of just pure entertainment, I mean, it had so much going on just from, you know, spectacle. It had nothing to even do with boxing, from the, you know, the Smoger's antics to kissing Marat on his back and bizarre scene when he was seemed like he was talking to his corner in the middle of exchanging in that one end of that one round. And there was a lot of excitement in the fight. I think Marat kind of, you know, ultimately the leveling class showed in the second half of the fight, and Bernard pretty much dominated. But it was fun to see him do that, and I had no objections to it. You know, I mean, it's wasn't something we were looking forward to. We were all kind of like, what's the point? But, you know, it turned out to be pretty entertaining and a good time.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, last few days, at least since the fight went down, I kind of tweeted, I think it was yesterday, that I guess I'll be the lone hater. It was Sunday. And I mean, okay, I'm not trying to be the actual hater here, and I'm not trying to be a jerk. But as much as the fight was entertaining, or at least way more entertaining than we thought it would or could be, and as much as I do have to give Bernard Hopkins respect because he's about 117 years old and he's fighting at the level that he's fighting, as much as I do have to give him respect, at the same time, you know, stepping away from the jokes for just a second and being a more serious boxing fan, I just don't really get all that much pleasure from watching Bernard Hopkins behave that way in the ring. And that's the way that he has behaved in the ring for the last handful of years, where it really comes down to the kind of extracurricular stuff is going to be what pushes him through a fight. And I'm not saying that he's totally unskilled or he's got nothing aside from the dirty tricks or whatever, but at the same time, it was fairly constant in the fight. And it was really disappointing to see Steve Smoger constantly on Carl Marat's ass about the stuff that he was doing, and then not really saying shit to Bernard Hopkins, and then after the fight going over and, like, you know, humping his leg and stuff like that. I love Steve Smoger.
Yeah.
But all of these things combined, as much as the fight itself was entertaining, I was still just kind of, like, cringing going, and all this is going to mean is that we're going to see it again. You know?
I can see your point. Yeah. But I also felt kind of like as I was watching it, I think Smoker, he's just way too fucking lenient and pretty much lets – and that's why we love him sometimes. When you have two action brawlers in there and he never breaks it up, that's great. But when you have a fight like this going on and he's so slow to do anything, I think he created this standard where both guys felt like they could pretty much do whatever they wanted. And Murat did get dirty himself. And I personally,
I thought he was
even going further than Hopkins in response to what Hopkins was doing. And I see your point, but I think the thing about this was that you're right. There was a lot of the standard Hopkins bullshit antics, and you know that's kind of I guess matter of taste. Either you love it or hate it, and most people hate it. But he was also doing a lot of real boxing and effective defense and just getting the better of all the, you know, throwing the clean punches and he was doing a lot of real stuff too. So at least it wasn't just that, which some Hopkins fights have been, you know?
No, he was doing real things. It wasn't like he was only doing fouling or anything like that. And I don't mean to suggest it like that. He was doing a lot. And while I will say that, yes, Carl Murat was fouling and it was extremely obvious, I think that was the problem, was that he was doing it in a way where, like, he didn't know how to get away with it. Bernard Hopkins does. You know, he's far more sneaky about it and, you know, was waiting until Steve Smoker was behind him and then hitting, you know, Murat on the hip. And there was other blatant stuff from Hopkins, too. But he was just far more craftier about it than Murat was. And so that's not Hopkins' fault, you know, that Murat doesn't know how to get away with it. But at the same time, it's like I keep saying, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And it can be an eyesore when you do.
Right. That's true. I don't know. I didn't think Hopkins really did anything that warranted, you know, anything beyond, you know, a little bit of warning. I mean, I think the biggest problem is that, you know, both guys were doing a lot of shit and Smoker just wasn't doing anything really to enforce the rules. You know, and then when he finally decided to, you know, and I think the point for Murat, maybe that was justified. I don't know. It was a bad night for Smoker, you know, from a serious kind of standpoint. But from a comedy standpoint, it was a brilliant night.
Yeah, it was for sure.
Because he also enabled a lot of the shit that we saw as far as the kissing and things like that wouldn't have happened unless that atmosphere had kind of been created where – and how many times in this fight did you see things where, you know, borderline low blows and the fighter turns their back because most of the time you expect that the referee, even if it's not, he's not going to, you know, punish the guy for it, he's going to at least jump in and stop the action.
Say something,
Right, and that didn't happen. And both guys at moments turned their back and the other guy just kept attacking him. That's what led to the sequence with the kissing, I think.
Well,
because Smoker was nowhere near it.
And I don't want to get into a full-fledged discussion on how exactly referees should be officiating necessarily, but at the same time, I think that it's a reasonable expectation where if you're a fighter and you get hit with a nut shot, it should be a reasonable expectation that the action is going to get stopped and you're going to get a brief break. Whatever it was in the sixth round when Hopkins, you know, actually cracked Murat pretty decently with a nut shot. And then, you know, Murat, like, kind of turned around like he was going to get a break. And then Steve Smoker's going, what are you doing? I'm not giving you a break. And then luckily the bell ended because Murat was like, fuck that. I'm taking a break whether you give it to me or not. So, you know, things like that, that's actually, you know, jokes aside, that actually could create a fairly crappy situation in the ring. Like if Bernard Hopkins had run over and hit him in the back of the head or something, obviously I'm kind of, you know, slippery sloping it there. But still, it's, yeah, anyway. Point being, it wasn't a great showing from Steve Smoker, although I will say that, again, I do got to give Hopkins some respect because I didn't really think, I said last week that if he were put into a position where he was really pushed, that I thought that he would be more likely to kind of like, you know, fake a foul to get out of a fight or, you know, get DQ'd. And, well, I mean, I guess he kind of did try. But at the same time, there were other instances where he was pushed back and instead of, you know, for all intents and purposes, bitching out, he fought back and he started swinging. And it was, I think, in the fourth round where like the first three rounds, it kind of looked to me like Murat was a little bit fresher. You know, he was quicker of hand and foot than Hopkins had expected. Either that or Hopkins was slower than he thought. I don't know. But either way, Hopkins didn't look too great in the first two, three rounds to me. And then in the fourth round, Murat had Hopkins on the ropes. And instead of kind of like, you know, trying to wiggle out, Hopkins just cracked him one. I think it was a right hand. And it like kind of stunned Murat for a second. And to me, that was the exact point at which Bernard Hopkins seemed to kind of like realize that, oh, I can fight back and I'll be just fine. You know, there's not going to be an issue with me fighting back, and I'm not have to worry about this guy knocking me out. I'll just brawl out of it. And that's what he did for the rest of the fight. And again, got to give him credit for doing that because he didn't have to. So, yeah, that type of stuff made it more entertaining than we thought it'd be. So, thanks, old man Hopkins.
And it's strange to see a fight where the 48-year-old guy, where his, basically his 30-year-old opponent runs out of gas halfway through the fight. You know, and guy with all the energy. I mean, obviously he's a better fighter, and that was a huge part of what happened too. But Murat was Murat was able to be effective early just with his activity and, you know, walking forward and kind of taking advantage of the fact of how defensive-minded Hopkins was being. But I just think, yeah, eventually it was class, and also, you know, the fitness that. The way Hopkins keeps himself, the shape that he's in, it is pretty amazing when you think about it.
Yeah, it is. And so, well, my question to you then, as far as like the, you know, level of opposition or whatever you want to call it, or the quality of the win, was the win good for Hopkins because he is, you know, 48 years old or 49, is it? I think soon 49 or anyway, whatever. He's in his late 40s. But was the win good for Hopkins because he's old, or was the win good for Hopkins because Carl Murat's a good fighter? You know, I think this is a question that we do have to ask if we're going to be looking at it seriously.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, a lot of it has to do with the fact that he's 48 years old. As far as, you know, the admiration for the win, I mean, would we be touting, Adonis Stevenson or Kovalev if they beat Murat? Probably not. You know, Murat already lost, and you know, in everyone's mind against Campillo, and didn't Murat get stopped by Cleverly too?
So I think he got stopped late, like in like the 11th round or something.
It's not
like that.
It's not such a great win on paper, but I think again, I mean, there is some kind of it's amazing to watch a guy 48 years old. I mean, he's almost 50, and it's insane to see that. But, you know, you just have to judge the fight, I think, as, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people were, even though it obviously exceeded expectations, I mean, there were still some people who had a pretty negative opinion of, you know, about the whole event and the card and Hopkins, you know, fighting in particular. But, I'm just judging the product that I got, you know, when I turned on the TV on Saturday night, and I came away from it pretty happy with it. You know, there was a lot of good stuff there. Doesn't mean that Hopkins is going to be back as like a world-class fighter. To me, it's similar to Cotto beating Delvin Rodriguez. And I didn't mean to say Hopkins not a world-class fighter, but meaning that do I think Hopkins can compete against the best fighters in the division? Honestly, no. I still think that guys like Stevenson, Kovalev, but you know, it makes you wonder. I mean, it makes you think about it. What would, could Hopkins outbox those guys who are so kind of dependent on their power? I mean, it gives, you know, you feel, but anyway, that's not going to happen, right, with the Golden Boy and Showtime and that shit. So who knows where Hopkins goes. But it's hard to imagine that, you know, Hopkins or like Cotto a few weeks ago, that those guys are going to be able to beat the best that's out there for them. But they both, you know, they both had pretty good performances against opposition that, you know, was able to make them look good.
Well, I'm not 100% sold on Cold War angle. First of all, Sergey Kovalev, for example, is with Main Events, if I'm not mistaken. And I know that there are kind of like little ins and outs about like which promoters tend to work with who more and blah, blah, blah. And Kovalev's already been on HBO, but even then, I don't know that, I think Bernard Hopkins has enough pull that he could make a bigger fight like that happen. Not a ton of pull, and he's never been a huge draw.
Yeah,
but that's exactly what I'm getting at, is that I think that the heart of the issue is that I don't think he's interested in fights like that right now. You know, even after this win, at the same time, yes, it was a good fight. It was more entertaining than we thought, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that this is about probably as good as it's going to get from Hopkins at this stage. And I don't think that most of his fights are going to look like this. I wish that they would. And you were just talking a minute ago about some people having a negative outlook of the fight, you know, in the past few days. And I would say that overall, I'm one of them. Kind of like I was saying earlier in the show, I do appreciate that it was a decent fight. And the problem for me was that the decent parts or the good parts were kind of few and far between. And the in-between was a lot of fouling and a lot of bullshit. So while it was kind of entertaining from like a spectacle or circus standpoint, that's just not really what does it for me. You know, I want to see good, consistent action or good, consistent skill or something like that. And to me, even though Hopkins threw more punches than he has in recent years, it's just that doesn't really do it for me. So that said,
yeah,
it's
I hear you. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the – well, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I do see the good and the bad in it. It's not just that it was all bad. It was just that the bad parts of it slightly overshadowed the good for me. I just wish there had been far less fouling shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just look at it like maybe it's just the mood I'm in today or whatever. But, you know, I just, like, what's the alternative? You know, I mean, it's just it's a card on Showtime. You know, triple header. I mean, I'm intrigued watching Deontay Wilder. The Kid Chocolate Rosado fight, I think, was a lot more competitive than we thought it was going to be. And then you had the Hopkins main event. I mean, as a whole, you know, that's something that I'm interested in watching. I mean, it's like what we always joke about with, like, the ES Friday Night Fights cards and the, you know, Fox Sports card, that sometimes I choose not to watch them. And, I mean, I was kind of thinking about, it's like if you're a basketball fan, you know, do you have to watch the, you know, the championship game in the Australian Basketball League? I mean, there's a ton of sports all around the world at all different levels, you know, and some things are compelling enough to watch and some things, you know where the best is and some people are more interested. You know, there's just so much boxing and you can't possibly watch all of it. And I find boxing fans very, you know, interesting in a way because they seem to be so kind of like I'm not saying you, but like there's this kind of like territorial, like, you know, street cred, constant, you know, struggle for validation from some, that you have to watch every single boxing event that takes place anywhere in the globe in order to have, you know, a respectable opinion about it. And you know, there's certain events and fighters and things like that you know, I'm interested in. And anyway, Hopkins is still, you know, enough that, like, I'm not going to be really excited to watch his fights, even though this turned out to be pretty good in my opinion. But I still probably will, you know. And it may not be, like, real world-class, you know, in between, like, the two best guys in their divisions. I don't think he's ever going to be in a mega fight like that again. But, you know, but I think it's still enough to kind of he still brings something, you know. And I think he did display a lot of really elite skills that led him, you know, had him winning this fight in terms of, like, the defense and his timing and the way he was leading with his right hands and the way that he was getting the better of the exchanges. You could just see that it was the difference between, you know, a great career professional in Hopkins and a guy in Murat who's just not that good. You know, for as much kind of heart as he showed and the game plan and the aggression and all that, it just, skill-wise, you could see a difference there. And there was something to kind of appreciate in terms of what Hopkins was doing, even if he was doing it against an inferior opponent, which is kind of all you can expect, you know, at 48 years old. I mean, a lot of people are excited to see Golovkin fighting Stevens, and I don't see that as any different in terms of the gap between the two competitors.
I will say that they're... Okay, well, to word it another way, kind of like what you were saying right now and that I agree with, is that if you take just about, you know, any other fighter or most other fighters at 48 or 49 years old, and put him in with a guy like Murat, or at least, you know, give him the type of challenges that Hopkins was, you know, that he was dealt on Saturday night. Do most fighters at 48 or 49 get through those? I would say probably not. So at least in that sense, I mean, okay, I guess the theme of the show thus far in the first 20 minutes is me begrudgingly giving Hopkins respect. But, yeah, I do give him respect. I guess I'm just saying that I'm not that interested in watching him in general. And while I appreciate a good performance, yeah, I think I'll probably move on.
Well, I think there's, like you were saying, like, I think as far as his legacy, he's already achieved everything that he will achieve, you know, really will achieve when it comes down to looking at him, you know, measuring him as an all-time great and where does he rank in his era and all that kind of thing. I don't think he can really add to that because I don't see him taking or winning those fights, you know, beating Jean Pascal, getting that last kind of legitimate light heavyweight championship or whatever. That was his kind of his final, you know, like, note on his Hall of Fame resume. Now it is all about the age. I mean, it is all about, like, just how can this guy at 49, even against fighter, you know, I mean, Murat's still a competent fighter. He's maybe not great, but right. So I think right now it is kind of like, yeah, the Bernard Hopkins retirement tour and just kind of watch him and see where it goes. I mean, he's talking about mega fights and yeah, I don't see that happening, but who knows? You know, maybe he
so
does
has,
fight against
your,
a higher-profile guy or something. I don't know.
Has your mind changed about a potential Hopkins-Mayweather fight, or at least from what you had initially said?
No, I mean, I don't think there's any chance it would have it's going to happen, or it's even possible that it would happen. But like I said originally, I mean, I don't know. I mean, if it did happen, you know, I'd watch it.
Yeah,
I mean, they're telling me, you know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If I'm the guy making the final decision, and it's like, hey, it's up to you. It's either Mayweather, Devin Alexander, Mayweather, Khan, or Mayweather, Hopkins.
Yeah.
Probably go Hopkins, even though I don't hate the other two fights.
Oh,
but just on the freak show angle and how big of a promotion it would be, and all the shit talking going in. I mean, ultimately, what happens in the 36-minute or, you know, yeah, 36 minutes? That's. You know, is it going to be any worse than what maybe a Mayweather-Alexander, what that kind of chess match that would look like, where Floyd probably outclass him pretty easily against Khan? I mean, the Khan fight could be exciting.
Maybe,
but
yeah.
I don't think, you know, I mean, yeah, I'd be down for it, but it's just not going to happen, right? I mean, there's no way in hell that would happen. I don't think Hopkins can cut to 160. I don't believe that. I don't think Mayweather has any interest in doing it. You know, if he could somehow pull that off, I mean, Hopkins would be so much bigger in the ring.
Yeah, he would be bigger by quite a bit.
I don't see any chance of that happening.
I wouldn't be that surprised if Hopkins could make 160. I mean, it would be quite a feat, but I wouldn't be that surprised because he's, you know, just leads a clean lifestyle and all that type of stuff. But
you think it would diminish him, though, to do it?
Well, yeah, I don't think there's any question. I don't think there are any really situations where a fighter is losing a significant amount of weight and it's a good thing. You know, I think that's kind of a given. So, yeah, I don't know. I still kind of feel the same in that I just don't really want to see it, but I don't really have control over it happening. And then you just giving those three options right there, I'm just like, fuck. I don't know.
Well, I'm curious. I mean, it sounds like all the rumbling is that it's going to be Mayweather-Khan, and I guess, you know, that's not – I mean, there's other fights I would rather see, obviously, but I do kind of think that maybe Khan can do some stuff early to at least make it a little exciting. But, it, you know, he's just looked terrible since the Garcia knockout. You know, he's
had the knockout.
Well, since Khan got knocked out, stopped by Garcia.
I was flipping something in my head, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, he just has not looked good at all. So a couple of years ago, it seemed like that'd be an intriguing fight, just because Khan has speed, which is something that, you know, so many Mayweather opponents don't seem to have.
Well, putting aside, like, to close out the Bernard Hopkins discussion, putting aside the promoter issues just for a minute, do you think that there are any, you know, upper tier light heavyweights that Bernard Hopkins, you know, would reasonably face or could beat? Like, you know, pretty much anybody like, you know, Tony Bellew or Kovalev, Stevenson.
Well, Bellew, I kind of feel like, yeah.
Boutte, you know, guys like that.
Well, Boutte, too, because, you know, he looked so vulnerable. He didn't look great against Grachev, and then he didn't look, obviously he got knocked out by Carl Froch, so there's some guys that Hopkins could do some stuff with. I mean, I don't know. You know, you'd make him an underdog against, I mean, Kovalev just looks so kind of unstoppable right now, but, and then a guy like Stevenson, I feel like I could see Hopkins doing some things to kind of frustrate Stevenson. I don't see him doing what he did against Murat, but I could see him kind of making it ugly and making it a close fight. But, you know, Stevenson looks so good against Cloud. It's tough. I mean, you have to make him a pretty big underdog. The fact that he got, you know, it just, there's we don't really have a, I don't know. You know, it's tough to think about it because you look at Hopkins against Dawson and how he basically let Dawson just, you know, shadow box him to an easy point decision. And then, but how can we judge Dawson now? Because then he cuts all the weight, gets knocked out by Ward. You could argue he was never the same, you know, and he gets destroyed by one punch by Stevenson. So I don't know if there's a real comparison there. But, yeah, I could see Hopkins being competitive with those guys. But I think it also speaks to, he shouldn't be competitive with those guys. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if Stevenson and Kovalev aren't that good, then Hopkins shouldn't be able to be competitive just because he's 48 years old and he's obviously, you know, physically diminished a bit, even if he can look good against somebody like Murat. You know, the whole game plan and the mindset he had against Dawson kind of showed his age, I think. And then he comes back and he just looks great against Cloud and Murat. But what does that really mean? You know, those guys are both pretty limited guys.
Yeah, there are so many outside factors and, you know, intangibles and all that type of stuff getting factored into this that it's really tough to judge the performances against Chad Dawson. It's like trying to go off of that first Hopkins-Dawson fight. Like, where exactly would you take that? A lot of people were like, oh, Dawson's shook. You know, he tried to foul Hopkins, so now he's going to get knocked out. But I remember that was a lot of people were saying stuff like that going into the second fight, and then they go into the second fight. Dawson kind of just, you know, sleptwalked his way to a victory and stuff like that. Yeah, it's kind of tough to really get in there and say. But, yeah, I think that it's unlikely that he's going to get in with any of those guys. But if he did, I don't know that I could favor him against a Kovalev or, you know, a Stevenson or anybody like that. Anyway, well, I wish him luck in everything, and it is incredible what he's doing. But, yeah, I've kind of checked out of that whole thing, I guess, the bandwagon. On to the undercard. Anyway, Peter Quillin wound up getting a TKO victory over Gabe Rosado, and it was a TKO because a left hand of his caused a pretty significant cut over Gabe Rosado's left eye that wound up stopping the fight. So I guess what I would ask you is, how did you think the fight would have been scored had that gone to a decision? I mean, I know it was a TKO, it was a punch, and it was a rightful. I thought it was the right call to make to stop that fight because that cut was huge. But then they showed the scorecards, and the scores were all really wide. One judge didn't give one round to Gabe Rosado.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how would you have had it scored at that stoppage?
I'm not sure exactly. I wasn't really scoring it, but in my mind, I mean, I definitely thought Rosado won a few rounds, maybe four rounds. I did kind of think Quillin was ahead, you know, closely, kind of the unofficial tally I was keeping in my head. He also had a knockdown, so that was an extra point. So I could. How many rounds were there? 10? Was that TKO in the 10th?
Before the 11th that it stopped.
I was kind of just keeping in my mind, like, where I could see the fight being rather than scoring it myself, and I was thinking it was like a 5-4 Quillin fight, you know. But Rosado fought a lot better than I thought he would, and he seemed to really bother Quillen just with his, you know, pressure and activity. And I still think Quillen was probably landing the cleaner shots, but he's so, you know, but you just can't give Quillen rounds the way he was fighting in parts of that fight. You know what I mean? I mean, you kind of have to score a round for the aggressor if the other guy's not doing anything except throwing one punch every, you know, 30 seconds. And
yeah, there was – sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no. I mean, just the whole way that it unfolded kind of surprised me, because I thought that there were a couple moments early that made me think that it was kind of playing according to script, that Quillen would be able to kind of figure him out, time him, catch him with the big punch, hurt him, all that, but it just didn't happen. And Rosado kept rallying. And my initial reaction, because, you know, I was watching it, had a few friends over, and as soon as it ended, everyone was like, oh, you know, what do you think about the stoppage? And at first I was like, yeah, it looks like a really bad cut. I mean, it's hard, kind of hard to argue that, but Rosado's reaction to it convinced me that he should have been allowed to continue. I mean, if he was that clear-headed, and obviously, you know, he could see through both eyes, and I always thought sight was kind of the major issue with that type of situation, and he was so intent on continuing, I don't know, I think you kind of had to let him go there, give him a chance. The scorecards, to me, seemed ludicrous, because that basically showed that Rosado, even if he had gone, you know, the whole distance, 2.5 more rounds, had no chance to win. Because he was down 8 points.
None at all. None.
So he had, none. He needed a knockout, which is pretty fucked up. So,
yeah.
You know, in that sense of the stoppage, I guess, saved him a couple more rounds, because I don't think he was going to knock Quillen out. And, you know, the cut probably would have gotten worse whether Rosado won those last couple rounds or not. But it would have all been basically, you know, for naught. So the whole way that ended, and then the scorecards reading kind of left a bad taste, just because, I mean, a lot of people made fun of Rosado going into the fight, and I never really had too much of an opinion on him. When he kind of came on NBC Sportsnet, I did think some of the talk, which is kind of similar in my mind to what's going on with Curtis Stevens, from some people who are kind of giving him a better chance than I think he is going to have, you know, because we see him on NBC Sportsnet, but against kind of lesser competition. And Rosado got that win over Soto Carras, right, which was kind of a good win for, well, obviously better win now that Carras beat Berto. So, you know, but I still thought that Rosado was kind of overrated, you know, probably, you know, people wanted to throw him in with Canelo. They were ranking him as like one of the best junior middleweights, and I didn't really think that was warranted based on competition. But these last couple fights, I mean, if he's not really an elite, you know, top-ranked fighter, which he's probably not, he has shown a ton of courage against Golovkin and here against Quillen, and the attitude to want to continue and be that upset about, you know, the way it ended, and also getting screwed over with Love. In my mind, I mean, he's become kind of a sympathetic character, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think that your point about the Curtis Stevens point, I agree. You know, they both kind of talked their way into seeming more competitive than they really are, I think. And I don't mean that as a slight, necessarily. I mean that as a compliment. They both have kind of talked their way into a little bit more popularity than they perhaps otherwise would have had. And, you know, I can appreciate that, and I can definitely appreciate Gabe Rosado's attitude after being stopped, that he just wanted to continue. You know, I saw a couple comparisons to the Lennox Lewis versus Vitaly Klitschko fight where, you know, cut was obviously very serious, but Klitschko wanted to continue. So I kind of am in the middle. At first, when I was watching the fight, I was like, that sucks, but how can I really argue? That cut's huge. What are you going to do? You have to look out for the fighter. And then, yeah, you know, after hearing Gabe Rosado's reaction to it, and then hearing that he wanted to fight on, and then seeing the scores, and then kind of being like, what the fuck? Yeah, I did kind of feel like, you know, they should have let him go, but I'm going to kind of go in the middle and say that they could have let him finish the round. You know, it didn't necessarily have to go on, and they didn't have to say, well, all right, whatever, just fight on, we don't care about your eye. And they didn't also have to just stop it right then and there, especially when he's like, look, I can see, and it wasn't really bleeding very bad. So I can appreciate that, but they should have just let him finish the round, you know, if that's what it's going to be. Give him the last, I think it was like a minute and 15 seconds or something like that. Just let him try to land something big or whatever, and then give the corner a shot to try to close it back up or whatever. Yeah, it was unfortunate. But, yeah, I thought it was an interesting fight. It was an entertaining fight, in my opinion. And overall, actually, I should say that the card was pretty decent.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, it's hard to argue something like that, I guess, because you have the ringside doctor, and obviously we're not doctors, and that person is basically trusted to, you know, make the decision on what's best for the fighter's health. And, you know, he looked at the cut, and what's weird is that he let him continue in the middle of the rounds, and then, you know, in between rounds, and then in the middle of that 10th round, they brought him in again to look at it, and he basically said, you can't fight with that. It's tough to second-guess that guy, but certainly we've seen other, you know, fighters allowed to continue with seemingly just as bad of injuries, if not worse, and also just the, you know, the fact that he, the way he responded to it seemed like he deserved a chance, but I, you know, we're not really sure what problems could happen with a cut like that, so it's tough, you know?
Well, I'm not a doctor, and I'll repeat that, but I am technically in the medical field. But I think that the issue and the concern with a cut like that, where it is that it could lead to serious nerve or muscle damage around the eye, which is a significant concern. I'm not going to downplay that because, you know, I kind of fucking like my sight. You know, I kind of like to see, and I'm sure that fighters do as well.
Important sense.
And it's kind of tough to really step back and say, oh, well, Gabe Rosado was in the right frame of mind and he should be able to make those decisions. And that's kind of why the corner and the doctor and everybody are there, because the fighter, of course, wants to continue 99 times out of 100. But, and yes, it is about protecting them and et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, like we have just said, you know, if there's no immediate danger necessarily, of a guy continuing, then I'd kind of like to see it continue if it is possible, and I kind of think it was. So that's a bummer, and I do feel bad for him. And the point that you were making earlier about Gabe Rosado being a bit of a sympathetic figure, too, I think that's right on the money. It kind of – I feel bad for the guy because it seems like he can't really get over that hump and get a really big win. The Soto Carras win was good, but – that's about all he has at this. For the most part, the rest of his reputation is staked on close losses or losses in which he showed he was really tough and stuff like that. And that's not totally worthless per se, but, you know, to continue on in the sport and to really rise, for the most part, you're going to have to get big wins.
Yeah, and it seems, I never really thought that he was on that level in either division, but it is kind of weird that he has gone up to middleweight and fought a couple of the best guys there. Although he's obviously was really competitive with Quillen, but you know, when he was fighting at 154, it would just seem that if you can make 54, that would be it, you know, to his advantage to do that. And he gave up a shot at that IBF belt, I think, the one that Carlos Molina has now that Ishae Smith had won from Bundridge. I think that Rosado was the mandatory to Bundridge, and he gave up that chance to go fight Golovkin.
Yeah,
so
I kind of feel bad for the guy.
Yeah, he's done some stuff that should kind of endear him to boxing fans, but I think maybe there's something about him that people just don't like. You know, maybe the way that he talks and kind of carries himself, or maybe it's the sunglasses. I don't know, but it's hard not to like the guy after Saturday night. You know, I think it is the swag.
It's the swag. Yeah, it's the swag.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. I think that kind of like Floyd Mayweather, just about any time a guy really puts himself out there, kind of being over the top, flamboyant, or having a big mouth, there's going to be a contingent that just doesn't like that no matter what you do. And so I get that, and I can understand that. But in the ring, I think that he usually is a fairly fun guy to watch. He doesn't have a super great defense. You know, so he's going to get hit. He tends to cut, actually. He's been cut in a number of other fights, so, or you can at least see the scar tissue from when he's been cut before. So he's fairly entertaining. It's just, yeah, sometimes that's not quite enough, unfortunately. And I do think that he could stand to move down to 154.
I think so. And, you know, he could be maybe an exciting opponent who would, you know, push a good fight out of somebody like Arislandi Lara or someone like that.
Well, that kind of leaves the discussion now. Where does Peter Quillen go? Because being with Golden Boy at middleweight obviously doesn't leave him a whole ton of options. And I think it kind of looks to me unlikely like he could move down to 160 because he's a pretty decent-sized middleweight. So aside from a rematch, where does that really even leave Peter Quillen?
I don't know. I mean, it kind of depends. Do they want to pursue a rematch? I had read something about Quillen fighting Danny Jacobs possibly in February. So that's, you know, seems like a kind of a logical fight for Golden Boy to make. And, you know, I think that's kind of an interesting fight. But it wasn't a great result for Quillen, obviously. You know, I mean, most people feel like Rosado was giving him a really tough fight before he got stopped. He kind of had all the momentum in those last few rounds. Quillen didn't look great. He didn't live up to the expectations most people had that I think, you know, he was going to look really good against Rosado. And, you know, Quillen's been known for his power, and he's knocked a lot of guys down and had some, you know, some big, landed some huge punches against Fernando Guerrero and Hassan Endom, really hurt those guys, and wasn't able to do it against Rosado. Even the one time he had him down, Rosado popped right up. So it wasn't a good result for him, you know, by any means. But he'll keep moving forward, and maybe they make the Danny Jacobs fight. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing Rosado get a chance for a rematch because it was kind of unfortunate the way that it ended. But it does kind of temper all of our enthusiasm. I mean, I think if he had looked amazing and knocked Rosado out in early rounds, we'd all be kind of, again, bitching about the Cold War and sucks we can't, you know, Quillen can't fight Golovkin. I mean, because that's a fight that I thought, man, that'd be awesome. I mean, I thought Quillen was kind of the next best guy in the division, and maybe that's making me rethink that a little bit, or at least need to see Quillen going forward. But he'll keep floating around. I mean, that's the great thing about what Golden Boy Showtime are doing. They have so many fighters and so many TV dates. You know, they're going to keep, they can put stuff on undercards, and they're putting really good shows together. So I guess we just have to wait and see.
That is a decent point about Danny Jacobs, because I had totally forgot. They kept panning over to him ringside, didn't they?
Oh, I didn't even... Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they did, because he was sitting nearby Metal World Peace was in the house, too.
Yeah, they did it like twice. I was kind of exaggerating about that, but... Yeah, I do remember them showing.
They had a small box
in the
corner of the screen on Danny Jacobs the entire fight.
Yeah, they had slow-mo Danny Jacobs reactions during the entire fight.
Between
like after the stoppage. Yeah, after the stoppage, you could see him go, "Oh, fuck." You could see that shit. Yeah, that's a good point, though. I'm kind of skeptical about Danny Jacobs quite being on that level, because I think he's still kind of in the midst of his comeback. Although I think that eventually, like maybe mid-2014 or something like that, assuming both are still in that direction, that's a decent fight to make.
I think it's maybe rushing things a little bit for Jacobs too. But Jacobs is really talented. It's hard to get, I mean, there's a couple things, you know, obviously having cancer, being away from the sport, building back, but of course, you know, more importantly, that knockout loss to Pirog is not going to, you know, get out of anyone's mind anytime soon. So it does.
Yeah, where the hell is Dmitry Pirog anyway? Where did that guy go?
Hunting with Nikolai Valuev, looking for the Yeti.
He's off riding emus and flying ostriches and shit with Vladimir Putin.
I don't know. It'd be fun if he was back in the mix at 160, that's for sure. But, you know, the other thing about for Quillen is Golden Boy does have a ton of guys at 154, and you got to think maybe some of those guys could move up eventually. And, you know, guys like Austin Trout, Lara, although they're fighting each other. Canelo probably be at middleweight someday. So
well,
who knows?
I
maybe he bypasses. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I kind of hope for Gabe Rosado's sake that he's able to get that rematch, because I think he's kind of owed another shot, you know, at this point. He kind of got doubly screwed against Daleon Love. I thought that he won, most of us thought that he won the fight, and then on top of him not getting the fight, the decision just got totally obliterated anyway because of the positive, I think it was steroid or some type of diuretic, something like that,
oh, yeah,
for Daleon
right.
Love. So yeah, he kind of just got screwed there as well, and it would be nice to see him get another shot at number one, a title, but also the guy that, you know, perhaps he maybe could have come back and beaten. Regardless, he didn't have a chance at all with those scorecards, and that sucks.
Yep. We didn't mention either that wasn't one of the Hopkins-Murat scorecards a shutout? I mean, that was pretty fucking bad, too. There was one of those cards was like 11-1 or 12-0.
I
don't know.
I was about like a half hour behind, like real time, because I was putting my daughter to bed and stuff, so I started the card a little late. So I was like fast-forwarding through a lot of the stuff that I like wasn't interested in, and at the very end of the fight, I fast-forwarded, even through Bernard Hopkins' interview, to be honest. Because he just now, at this point in time, he just says kind of weird stuff in interviews, and I didn't really want to hear it. And I wanted to hear what Murat had to say, which was about what was expected, you know, that he thought that he was treated unfairly and et cetera. So I fast-forwarded through a lot of stuff, so I didn't even, there was a lot of stuff that I missed.
I can't believe Smoker just, like, bitch-slapped him like that.
Oh my! And it wasn't. He did it a few times in the fight too. A couple times, prying him apart. He was like, you know, pushing Murat back by the face. And
the one time he was like, "I've had enough of your shit."
He was, he started cussing at him. That was in like the third round or something. He started with that shit early. I mean, yeah, that was from a comical standpoint just gold. That was fairly awesome, really.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
It was kind of like they were talking all fight long about other, you know, Hopkins fights where, you know, antics were involved and stuff like that. I mean, really, just about every Hopkins fight, there's some type of crazy shit going on one way or another. But I remember, it must have been in like 98, I think it was, where it was the first Bernard Hopkins-Robert Allen fight, and Mills Lane was the referee, and he was getting so pissed off about the clinches that he, like, shoved the shit out of Bernard Hopkins, who fell
out
of the ring.
Yeah, that's when he fell out of the ring.
And tore
right?
a tendon.
Yeah.
And tore a tendon in his ankle because of it. And the fight was declared, like, a no decision and all this shit. It was just watching it, I was, number one, reminded of that. And two, I almost couldn't even be mad. Like, I was kind of mad because Steve Smoker was disappointing me, but at the same time, it was, Jesus, dude. It was like watching Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Well, on the opening fight, of course, our buddy Kelsey McCarson, who was on the show last week, was very excited about Deontay Wilder, the bronze medalist, Olympic bronze medalist, continuing on with his career against Nikolai Fertha. That was a pretty gnarly knockout, I would have to say. I mean, that's pretty much Deontay Wilder's calling card at this point is, you know, knockouts. As early as possible.
About what we expected, right? But Fertha actually came in there and tried to put up a good fight.
Yeah, I do have to give him a little bit of credit. I didn't really think that Wilder was really stunned all that much in the first round. They were kind of like, whoa!
Well, he hit him with that jab.
Wilder.
Right, he kind of stumbled backward with that jab that might have just been a balance thing, but it didn't look good for Wilder. I mean, it speaks to some kind of deficiency in his footwork or something that you could, you know, take four steps backward getting hit by Nikolai Fertha's jab. But it was exciting.
Sure.
You know, it looked.
You give Fertha some better skills, and, you know, it might have perhaps gone slightly differently, even if he wouldn't have beaten Wilder. But yeah, at the very least, at least he pushed him. You know, he put up a decent effort and was messing around and yelling at him and stuff like that in a few rounds.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
So yeah. It was fairly entertaining for a mostly one-sided fight.
Did your opinion of Deontay Wilder change at all?
Not really. I mean, you know, I don't know him that well. Only probably seen his last few fights since he's been on these like Showtime Extreme and a couple undercards. I think he is a likable guy. I think Kelsey was right. I mean, I do think he, I think he does have a good personality. I enjoyed his like post-fight interview. And but you know, what can you say about it? I mean, it was Nikolai Firtha. I mean, we don't know really what he'll be like as a fighter until he kind of, you know, steps up against somebody a little bit more credible than that. But I think it's undeniable that he's got power. He's a big puncher.
Yeah, exactly how big the power is, it's tough to say against his level of opposition. But still, it's, as Kelsey said last week, as I've said before too, power is something that you just can't teach. And that's something that, it's nice that that's something he doesn't have to worry about improving, and that the skills he can improve and has improved. I do like his jab quite a bit, actually. I think that he's gotten better with his jab. He's gotten a little bit more accurate with it. Although, the question for me is really how many fights should we be expecting him, you know, to take before he starts getting serious about pushing for a title shot? And I don't mean being, you know, built to be the next star, but seriously making a push to say, all right, I'm ready now. I want to go take the title. When should we expect something like that?
I don't know. You know, heavyweight's tough because, the Klitschkos have all the titles, don't they?
In a manner of speaking, yeah. I was saying last week, Vitaly Klitschko, I don't even know what's going on
right,
with him.
Right.
Something
never
fight about
again.
Politics and all this shit. So, but yes, basically, as I see it, Vladimir Klitschko is the heavyweight champion without any dispute. So that's kind of how I see it. But
so,
yeah.
You know, I think with... he's already had a lot of fights for to be still fighting at this level of competition. You know, 31 pro fights already?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the record gets more impressive on paper, but it doesn't seem like it's really doing anything for him. I mean, I think that from a development standpoint, it would be great to put him in with somebody who can go past the fourth round, you know, take him into deep water,
yeah,
like they say.
Like Chris Arreola for me would
Well,
be...
Chris Arreola might be favored against him right now. You know, I mean, that Chris Arreola might
Maybe.
Be,
I
you
mean,
know, a step above.
Yeah,
where
I don't
he
know.
Go.
But...
I don't know. I mean, it's just we. You know, it's impossible to say. I mean, I think heavyweight's tough, but I think he's ready to go. I think he's close. You know, one or two fights at least from getting to that level. Fighting Arreola or fight, you know, Tony Thompson or fight somebody who's kind of back end top 10, and that will prove a lot, you know. I don't think you can jump from Firtha to Vladimir Klitschko, but at the same time, I think Wilder's as good as some of the guys who have challenged the Klitschkos in recent years. You know, not Povetkin, but some of the other guys like Francisco Pianetta and other people off the top of my head. I don't
Povetkin.
Think Wilder's any worse than that.
Povetkin.
Even with, you know, his lack of experience, I mean, I still think he's probably as interesting a contender as they might have beyond the, you know, top couple guys. And we've already seen them fight most of them. It's just a matter of him getting the confidence and getting, you know. But what happens if you put him in against Arreola and Arreola knocks him out and does what he did to Seth Mitchell? So, I mean, that's kind of the balance of, you know, is like, when do you, how do you get him ready for a Klitschko fight without ruining the Klitschko fight by having him lose to somebody? Do you just throw him right in and just hope that he lands a bomb, you know, or do you, you know, hope that he can take a punch? I mean, there's still a lot we don't really know.
Well, you know, we have a handful of times referenced the situation with Sergio Martinez and Gennady Golovkin, where there's kind of a split between the people who really would like to see if Golovkin is the next middleweight champion or the next best middleweight or whatever you want to call it. If he is, they want to see kind of a clean switchover where he's able to beat Sergio Martinez and officially claim it. And then there are others that say, Sergio Martinez has faded enough that I don't really need to see that, and Golovkin just needs to continue on beating guys. You know, I'm kind of in the former, you know, party where I'd like to see there be an actual switchover if there is going to be one. But at the same time, that's kind of what I'm wondering if Deontay Wilder and his camp are trying to do, if they're kind of just trying to wait it out until Klitschko goes some other direction. But it's tough for me to even really say when that'll be, because physically and in terms of what he can do in the ring and it being effective, Vladimir Klitschko still looks fine to me. It doesn't look like really he's slipped or anything's happened or like he's in any danger of getting really old anytime soon. So I don't know that that would be the best strategy either, but I agree with you that at this point right now, Deontay Wilder almost certainly is not ready for Vladimir Klitschko. So there needs to be some kind of, you know, mid-tier or, you know, lower-end top 10 type of guy like a Chris Areola or somebody like that that he could get in against and get actual experience against, so that the gap between where he's at and a Klitschko or a championship isn't that large.
Yeah, I agree. I'd love to see that fight.
Yeah, Wilder something like Areola, that needs to happen.
I think would be great.
Well, I don't even know that Seth Mitchell is going to continue on in the sport, to be honest. I mean, I think that he probably has a lot of things to think about himself in terms of whether he's going to continue to be a professional fighter, to be honest. And I don't mean that to disparage the guy, but seriously, I think he's got to think about it. But if he does continue on, I think that at least could be something for Wilder, because at least then he would have faced the specter of, or the risk of punching power, a guy who can punch a little bit. But yeah, some step up is warranted here and soon before everybody loses interest or he loses to somebody who he shouldn't be losing to. Which brings us to Gennady Golovkin. Was he or was he not poisoned by Chernobyl?
Created in a lab by the KGB.
Yeah. Was he or was he not? Come on, we need answers for
that's me. That's what I heard. I think I read that on his Wikipedia page.
So are you in the contingent that thinks that Curtis Stevens is in deep shit because he's been,
yes,
you know, jawing at Gennady Golovkin?
Oh, I don't think it matters. I don't think Golovkin's that kind of guy. Like, he's going to try to specifically punish him just for that. But I think he's going to punish him regardless, you know. And maybe I'll be wrong, man. I mean, I've been wrong so many times here saying that, you know, oh, I just think that this guy's, like, just a cut above him. But here, I mean, I really think Golovkin's just on a totally different league than Curtis Stevens. And I expect it will be violent and spectacular. I think that Stevens' power might be a bit overrated considering the guys that he's been knocking out. And I think Golovkin's as close to a proven thing as possible without having really fought, you know, many people himself on the pro level. I don't think Golovkin's going to have much trouble. I mean, I think he's just much more sophisticated, and I think he's, you know, obviously a huge puncher. He's going to end up catching Stevens, hurting him, and putting him away pretty early.
I tend to agree with you, and I think that most people, most fans would probably agree with you. Although, just like how I was saying with Deontay Wilder, at least, you know, even if Curtis Stevens is kind of out of Golovkin's league, which I do think he probably is, but even if he is and Golovkin is able to even just absorb a shot or two that are significant and move on, I think that'll also, in a way, validate Gennady Golovkin and kind of basically legitimize this aura or this status that he's gotten through. I mean, looking at it reasonably, I like Gennady Golovkin. A lot of people like Gennady Golovkin because he can punch and he's knocking motherfuckers out. That's nice. A lot of people like to see that. Just about everybody does. But looking at it in terms of who he's faced, yeah, it does kind of leave something to be desired in terms of really just expecting him to be the next best middleweight or, you know, the next long-reigning middleweight or whatever. So at least I think that taking a couple shots and still getting a win would kind of go a long way in convincing the people that still need convincing. Might not be Curtis Stevens who necessarily does that, but that's a start.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best barometer we've had so far is the Macklin fight. I mean, you kind of have to, whatever Macklin may have done wrong in terms of strategy or whatever, I mean, you kind of have to just take that at face value. I mean, he destroyed the guy in three rounds. You know, this is a guy who, even though he was losing, was giving Martinez a decent, you know, a competitive fight until Martinez took over late in 10th, 11th, and went pretty much on even terms with Felix Sturm when he was one of the best middleweights in the world. You know, and Golovkin just destroyed him. I think that's, to me, a bigger piece of evidence than anything that's going to happen with Stevens. Unless Stevens should do something shocking and land, you know, land a big punch and hurt Golovkin, and that, I guess, would make us kind of rethink everything. But right now, you know, I just think if Golovkin does what's expected, I mean, I hear you, you know, you take a couple punches. It's kind of like if your opponent looks like shit and you just blow him away, that's somehow kind of like less impressive than if your opponent appears to really put up a good fight, does some good stuff of his own, lands a couple punches, and then you can overcome that and beat him. It kind of makes that you both look better. But, so yeah, I mean, I see your point. Like, it'd be nice to see Golovkin. There's still some unknowns, and maybe this fight with Stevens' kind of purported power, maybe this fight can reveal some things to us.
Well, I think there is something to be said for overcoming adversity. And I don't, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, he needs to overcome adversity and, you know, get through some crazy gnarly fight because that's the only way to get into the International Boxing Hall of Fame. I mean, I'm not trying to get that far ahead, but still, just to assess exactly what type of fighter he is and how far he's going to go, I mean, I'd like to know. And I would kind of like to totally jump on the bandwagon, and I basically have. But there still are some questions, you know, there are some reasonable questions to ask about what he's going to do. Although I do agree that the Macklin fight was, I thought that Macklin was going to put up a little bit more of a fight than that. I thought that he started out well, but then just started getting it totally shit-kicked. And I like Macklin. I wasn't necessarily rooting for him, but I like him as a fighter. He's fun to watch, but holy shit. You know, Golovkin was really laying it on him hard. So I don't think there's any question that he's easily one of the best middleweights. But I do think that there is something to be said for that, you know, for being able to walk through fire.
Yeah, I mean, I wish that Martinez just looked a little bit fresher, you know, looked maybe like he did a year ago, a year and a half ago, because that would be amazing to see the best versions of Martinez and Golovkin fight, and that would really be a great, you know, great way to pass the torch. I don't think that's the direction Martinez is going to go in because of Golovkin's obviously lower profile and higher risk than other possible opponents. And, you know, I mean, I there's other guys who kind of in that ballpark, they might not be at middleweight, but there's other really obviously great fighter at 168, Andre Ward. I feel like Golovkin's being built by HBO that we're going to get the answers on how good he is. One way or the other. You know, if it ends up being Golovkin and Ward, I mean, you're not going to get much, you know what I mean? will show us a lot. And there's other guys who, so I mean, I think the good thing for fans of Golovkin is he's obviously has a place at HBO as one of their kind of marquee guys. I think he's 30 years old, so you know, he's not a young guy, but in the next couple of years,
yeah.
I mean, I expect he's going to get that push to get those big fights because I think they know what they have in their hands and, you know, how good and how explosive and how exciting he can be. And, I mean, I think he's going to have the opportunity to win some major fights to really, you know, break out. I mean, maybe not a superstar, but become one of the kind of flagship guys there and have a chance to be regarded as one of the best fighters in the sport.
Yeah, definitely. And just like we were saying about Deontay Wilder, again, that punching power, that's just not something that you can teach. And that looks to me like the type of punching power that he probably is going to be able to carry up a division or two. How far up in weight he's going to go, I have absolutely no idea. But if it's a question of challenging Andre Ward, I think that Andre Ward would do well to avoid those punches rather than think, he's not going to be able to carry his power up. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's the exciting thing about being a boxing fan, I think, is you know that eventually those guys will have their moment of reckoning, you know, and Deontay Wilder is going to have to step up, you know, and fight a real 50-50 type of fight. You know, it's either that or he's going to go right in there against Klitschko. But one way or the other, you know, he's going to have the chance to prove how legit, you know, his whole record is. And I think so is Golovkin. You know, he will have a chance to fight one of those elite fighters. It might not be Martinez, but I think he's going to, you know, he's going to be involved in something big in the next year or so. I just think that, you know, the Stevens fight, it's kind of like a guy who's fighting four times a year. It's kind of like the Nonito Donaire showcases that he had when he won some people had him Fighter of the Year when he had four fights that one year because it's so uncommon this era. You know, but I mean, honestly, is Stevens even a top 10 middleweight?
I wouldn't call him a top 10 middleweight myself.
I don't think so. I mean, not an accomplishment.
He has a pretty decent punch.
He's a big puncher.
He's got a decent punch.
Yeah.
But not a whole lot past that.
And I see Golovkin is really sophisticated predator, you know?
Yeah.
He just seems like he picks his spots so well, and this has a feeling that Stevens is going to just be in way over his head.
Well, of course now the Golovkin love is going to start pouring in, and you know that already gives me an idea of who we should be having on the show next week. But there's a whole lot of things that Golovkin does that are just kind of surprising. He has that extensive amateur career, so it's not like he doesn't know what's up inside of a boxing ring. But how hard he punches in combination with, combinations, and also the accuracy, it's kind of scary. I mean, to be thinking against a guy like that while you're in the ring, I can just retreat, or I can, you know, sidestep, or I can do this, or I can do that. Next thing you know, you do exactly that, and you still get hit right in the liver, or, you know, you get cracked right in the chin. That's the type of stuff that's scary, like against Floyd Mayweather. You start getting hit when you think you're not going to get hit or, you know, when you weren't expecting to get hit, and that's when bad things happen. And against a puncher like Golovkin, I got to think that Curtis Stevens is kind of his ass is grass this coming Saturday, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
To bring an 80s statement back. So in the on the undercard of that, I don't know if you've had much of a chance to see Magomed Abdusalamov. Have you seen him? Have you seen much of him?
I actually saw him live, man.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Ringside.
I totally forgot that he was on the card.
He was on the undercard of Martinez Macklin.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Well, okay, well then, have you seen much of Mike Perez?
So I'm kind of an expert on him, actually.
Oh, well then you know him. You guys call each other, at about 11 p.m. every night. Have you seen much of Mike Perez? Abdusalamov's fighting.
He's like the Irish Cuban, right? I know I've seen him, but I can't remember exactly. So I'm not really that familiar with him. I know he's undefeated, and maybe I've just read about him.
The Russian, the Mexican Russian, or the Russian Mexican?
Yeah, what's his name? Gradovich.
Yeah, if any Gradovich. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen Perez like once on an undercard, and I just can't remember. And I'm kind of familiar. I've seen how do you say his name again? I always go with the first name, Magomed.
Yeah,
Abdusalamov.
Abdusalamov.
I've seen him a couple times and seems kind of, you know, rugged, crude, heavyweight dude with power. Whereas I think from what I've read and what I remember, Perez is more of a boxer.
Yeah, I'd say he's a little bit more boxer than Abdusalamov for sure. But yeah, he.
This is gonna be on HBO, right?
Yeah, it's as far as I know, it's on. They're gonna be showing the undercard of Golovkin Stevens.
Oh, okay, cool.
As far as I know, but yeah, there's a. Mike Perez is the dude that was born in Cuba, and then I think that he now lives in Belfast or Dublin or something like that. But in any event, yeah, he lives in Ireland. He's a little bit more of a boxer, I would say, than Magomed. But it's an interesting style matchup, I think. And also on top of that, if I'm not mistaken, both guys are undefeated. I don't really buy into the whole, you know, undefeated thing, although. It is significant if guys are undefeated and they're challenging each other and they're fairly young in their careers. I think that I like those type of fights where somebody's always got to go. You know, it's nice.
Yeah, it gives it a little bit of more, you know, higher stakes as opposed to kind of the fights we sometimes see with the young guy undefeated versus kind of the older, you know, journeyman type, you know, gatekeeper. These kind of fights, I think, are more fun because, you know, both guys have everything to gain from it.
For sure, and I think that it should at least tell us something about one or both of them, too. And, you know, the heavyweight division, as much as we talk shit about it, and I do constantly, I think probably for good reason, too, it's one of those things where it's really tough to totally write off the heavyweights. When a good heavyweight fight comes around, and, you know, legitimately
good
heavyweight
fight comes around, then it's tough to, you know, it's tough
to
ignore.
No, we like seeing big dudes smash each other in the head.
Yeah, of course.
Much
we were talking about
guy.
That last week. Come on. Long lost.
Yeah, and, you know, heavyweight fights can be a lot of fun. The problem we're always bemoaning is it just doesn't seem like there's the same level of athletes there. But sometimes that kind of contributes to these entertaining brawls we get a lot at heavyweight where two guys are just staggering around. And I'm thinking on the kind of the Shpilka-Malo fights that were here in Chicago.
that was fun.
You know, and you just – but based on – the styles and everything here, I mean, it sounds like Magomed is pretty much going to come forward and be the puncher, and Perez is going to be the boxer, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I would say that that's probably a pretty safe prediction. Perez isn't real big for a heavyweight in terms of size. I mean, he doesn't really weigh in all that much when he's in good shape. He's in, like, the 225 to 230 range from what I've seen. And even though Magomed isn't all that much bigger – weight-wise, I think he's like about 6'4 or so. So he should have a decent size advantage too. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be a test, I think, for Abdusalamov in terms of actually having to kind of chase a guy down. I would think that he's probably going to do that. And then it's also going to be a test for Mike Perez in terms of being able to kind of fend off the guy that's a little bit bigger and is a good puncher. So it could be interesting. You know, we were surprised by Bermain Stivern and Chris Areola last year, or earlier this year, actually. So,
yeah,
hopefully it will surprise us.
I'm just down that HBO has an opening fight. You know, I hate the one-fight cards.
Yeah, especially when they're showing the fight that they, you know, did last week and I already saw it or something. I mean,
yeah. Like the Marquez Bradley replay before Alvarado.
Yeah. Whatever. You know, I get it, but yeah, I would rather just have more fresh new fights.
But when they replay the last week fight, it gives us a chance to watch it and score with the sound off.
Oh well, yeah, that is true. You know, and I do like to score with the sound off and an eye patch over one eye, and also a cock ring.
That's an important part of scoring. All judges should be required to wear genital rings.
Thank you. I've been championing this for years. Finally got somebody who agrees. Speaking of cock rings, have you seen the Adrian Broner threesome tape yet, James Foley?
No.
Well,
I have not seen it. Should I see it?
No, I haven't seen it either, and I'm not going to see it, but I read earlier today.
I might take a look at it. Fuck it. Why not?
You probably will take a look at it. I don't really think I want to see it, but yeah, I read earlier today that an Adrian Broner threesome sex tape had been quote unquote leaked. So
I saw people talking about it on Twitter. It's really shocking, huh? Who would have thought of all people,
well,
Adrian Broner, be involved in something like that?
Really, though, I will say, though, by leaked, I really hope they're not talking about a fucking R. Kelly sex tip. This is
no,
terrible.
No, no.
I really don't
that
want
was,
that.
Yeah, no, there were no golden showers.
Fucking crazy.
No.
Fucking crazy. Yeah.
Yeah,
I really
wish that guy
really
would just
though,
stick to, you know, putting out videos of himself taking a shit and flushing money down the toilet at Popeyes.
Thank you. Thank
you.
Know,
have
I mean,
class.
Keep it classy.
Yeah.
Keep it classy. Jesus Christ. I mean, I had just also read, I mean, it's kind of on a more serious subject, but I really, really wanted to go to Broner Maidana because it was going to be in Vegas on December 14th, and then they just announced this past week that they're going to be moving it to San Antonio, which I'm kind of bummed about because I don't know that I'm going to be able to make a San Antonio trip. I could make a Vegas trip, but I don't know.
Yeah, it sounds dicey.
Come on, let's go to San Antonio, James. Let's broadcast live from
we'll
San,
do the show
San Diego.
Live. Yeah.
And then we'll thank San Diego the whole time.
Exactly. My bad. My bad, San Antonio.
My bad. Yeah, I'm bummed about
yeah, it's
trip,
a weird
anyway.
Location for that, huh?
Well, I guess the in
well,
terms
must
of
be that
like
huge
you know,
Argentinian you know, population in San Antonio.
Yeah, everybody knows about it. It, well, you know, Vegas isn't really a great location in terms of drawing on demographics and stuff like that either, but at least that's kind of a known quantity in terms of a fight town. And, you know, I'm not saying San Antonio is a bad fight town because they put on some pretty successful cards there in recent years, but, yeah, it just seems kind of like an odd move for me, and I was looking forward to hopefully seeing that. And, of course, now it's going to be like a kick-ass card, and I'm not going to be able to see it, so I'm kind of pissed about that shit.
That is going to be an awesome card.
Yeah, with what's it called? Thurman, Keith Thurman fighting. And
oh, well, that's why it's in San Antonio.
That's exactly why they moved it.
Thurman's
that's
second
exactly
hometown.
I wanted to thank San Diego again.
He's huge there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think people booed him for about 20 minutes straight after that.
Yeah, it's a bummer, man. I really like that fight, too, the headline, the main event. Broner and Maidana, it's grown on me, you know. I mean, I wouldn't have thought while, you know, I guess maybe prior to the last couple fights, obviously Broner just moved to welterweight, but I think it's a great matchup. I mean, Maidana can really punch, and I think Broner's going to need to be on that night to stay away from that. You know, I still favor Broner. I think he's going to win, but I'm pretty excited to see how it's going to all unfold.
Well, what if you're making a pick now, even though we're, I don't know, a month and a half early,
I'm going Broner.
Which way?
Broner.
Going Broner. You
my
heard
decision.
It here first, people.
I mean,
you've
if
got the Broner boner.
Maidana wasn't in the sex tape, was he?
Oh, shit, I hope not, dude. I sure hope not. Would that be considered an Asian sex tape since he's El Chino?
It would it'd be not that I've ever gone on porn sites, but it would have a lot of tags underneath it, you know.
That, yeah.
Group sex,
yeah,
Asian, Latino.
Yeah, and it would probably have the BBW one underneath it too, because Adrian Broner looks kind of fat.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't know anything about porn sites or anything like that.
Well, and if his dad made an appearance, that wouldn't be good.
No, that wouldn't be good, and I don't really want to go. I've never been to those type of porn sites.
Me neither.
You're scaring me, Fulton. I'm kidding.
I've never seen anything like that. And anyway, just the other day that there was actually porn. I never looked much.
Yeah, I read about that porn stuff on the internet the other day, but I don't touch it. I was kind of skeptical about Broner Maidana at first myself. I was kind of like, Adrian Broner's moving up, and Maidana's going to crush him. But the closer we get to the fight, I'm a little more intrigued by it because you know, even in some of his bigger wins, Marcos Maidana looked pretty vulnerable. You know, not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, I like Maidana. Who doesn't really like Maidana, or who doesn't like watching him fight, at least, because he tends to be in damn good fights. But yeah, I don't know that I can totally get behind him in terms of him, you know, me thinking that he's going to just crush Adrian Broner. I think that's an intriguing matchup.
For sure. I mean, you got to imagine Broner will be able to punch Maidana. He's going to hit him. You know, Maidana's not really known for his defense. I think the big question is, can he land something big in return? And, you know, how will Broner take it?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's a good question, too, because Marcos Maidana is also still at least a little bit new to welterweight. You know, he maybe hasn't fully settled into the division quite yet. Well, neither is Adrian Broner, so in that way, there's just a couple of extra little factors outside that.
Well,
and
Maidana's
been
able
to call that fight.
He's been able to land his punches against some really good boxers. So, really, the only guy who kind of shut him out was Devin Alexander. You know, and that was just kind of a weird fight.
I've said before, and I have admitted that I'm not a huge Adrian Broner fan, but I don't think that Adrian Broner's defense is what's cracked up to be. I think that his defense is actually kind of porous, and that he would be better served being more of the type of guy that he was trying to be at lightweight against even like Antonio DeMarco, where he was kind of walking him down and moving his head that way rather than kind of trying to do the quote-unquote shoulder roll shit. Because he's been getting hit trying to do that stuff, and I don't know that it's a real great approach for him to take, especially against a guy like Maidana, who, in my opinion, you know, he kind of is a bit of a clubber, but still, you know, I think he's better skilled than he's often given credit for. And if he's to be believed, I think it was something like in the amateurs, he fought Lucas Matisse 5 times and won like 4 of them or something like that. So, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but I think he's got some skills.
I think so, too. And even though I thought Broner pretty handily outboxed Malignaggi, it was kind of interesting to see his strategy there, you know, his first fight at welterweight. He, you know, let Pauly, who's, you know, kind of a, you know, slicker boxer himself, and obviously Pauly's not known for his power and also has been kind of fragile, vulnerable in some big fights when he's fought, you know, tougher competition. Broner was surprisingly defensive that night, you know, and basically just boxed moving backward and let Pauly kind of take the reins and be the aggressive guy and outwork him. It just seemed weird, you know. I mean, I know it was his debut at the weight and he was jumping up 12 pounds, but I think Broner was actually kind of the thicker, bigger guy, and if any welterweight seemed like the kind of guy that Broner could walk down, it would have been Pauly. The fact that he fought that way, it makes you think that against a guy like Maidana, even though, you know, Maidana had most of his career been a junior welterweight, a big puncher who's fought, you know, a lot of bigger guys, kind of makes you think that Broner will take a similar tact, look to kind of box moving backward. And I don't know if that's the best strategy for him. I mean, seeing like a lot of times against a puncher, boxing that way allows them to kind of get the distance to land something big.
Yeah, and while I agree that that I thought that Adrian Broner won pretty handily against Pauly Malignaggi, and, you know, God bless you, Pauly. You know, you're entertaining and good behind a mic and everything like that. I'm not a big fan of you as a fighter. Why am I even talking like Paul Malignaggi is going to be listening to this? He's not listening to us. But seriously, you know, I just can't really.
He's in Italy with Phil LaGreco right now.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Well, yeah, they're expecting Victor Ortiz for lunch.
He's flying from Bulgaria.
Uh-huh. With his little cowboy handkerchief on. I can't really too behind that performance. I thought Broner won pretty easily, but at the same time, the style that he fought, I don't think that style is going to work for him very well against other top welterweights, because he got hit a pretty good amount against Paul Malignaggi, and perhaps it was that he knew Paul Malignaggi doesn't have much power, and that's why he didn't care, and that could be the case. However, that's also the type of stuff that sticks to you. You can't just change styles very quickly. Styles are tough to change. And so getting into that habit and then going in against the top welterweight with that style, I don't think that's a good idea for him. And I think that he's liable to get knocked out if he fights that way.
Well, I think the concern with Broner is that he gets too, might be the kind of guy who gets too wrapped up in his own hype and his own ability. And, you know, we know he's immensely talented, but that might kind of lead him to think that he can just kind of get in the ring and figure out what he needs to do, you know, and just, you know, basically once he gets in the ring, he can beat whoever's in front of him without putting in the same kind of, you know, preparation and work. And I mean, I think the apt comparison is Mayweather, who's obviously kind of his, you know, idol or his friend or whatever you want to call it, mentor. Mayweather, you know, 90% of it is in the gym. I mean, he prepares, works harder than any other fighter, as hard as anybody in the world. And, you know, it's that work ethic and that the smarts and the game plan, and he knows exactly what type of fighter that he is and what he needs to do to be successful. And, Mayweather's obviously had a couple incidents outside of the ring, but, and obviously, you know, also adopted this kind of cartoonish persona in recent years on, you know, 24/7 and all that. But he's never been the kind of clown that Broner is in terms of all the just dumb things that he says and the videos and everything that he does. And it does kind of make you wonder, is he going to, now that he's kind of on the top and he's making $1 million paydays and he's, you know, getting a taste of success, is he going to, you know, do what he needs to do to keep winning, to be great? You know, is he going to, or is he going to just kind of show up in the ring and think to himself, well, Maidana's kind of a limited brawler, limited slugger. I'm obviously better boxer, more talented, quicker. I can just kind of show up and I'll be able to, you know, outpoint this guy. Because that kind of attitude, eventually you're going to get beat. You know, and the one thing about Floyd is it's like he takes every opponent so seriously and he knows exactly what he needs to do and he puts in the work to make sure that he's going to be able to do it.
Yeah. Definitely, and that is one way in that they're very different, for sure.
They appear to be, right? I mean, like, Floyd's not blowing up, you know. I mean, you saw Broner in that video. They were making fun of how fat he was on All Access.
Yeah, and that is definitely one way that they're different. And Floyd Mayweather, in a lot of ways, seems more mature than Adrian Broner, at the very least, in terms of motivation and work ethic, as you said. Also, I mean, it's just, I'm not really a big fan, as I've said before, of that kind of like gaining fans and gaining popularity by being a douchebag type of thing. I do understand that it sells, and I do understand that, you know, that a lot of people really do want to see that, obviously, because they're selling, but me personally, I'm not a huge fan of it, so I'm kind of like, you know, I probably shouldn't say this as a, you know, highly respected blogger and whatnot, but I do kind of look forward to Adrian Broner getting his clock cleaned a little bit, because I'm not a fan of the antics. You know, I want to see, like, honest boxing, you know, more often than not. I don't really want to see hype and bullshit. But that's just me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of like what you just said is kind of the secret to Mayweather's, you know, box office success, is people want to see him get knocked out and get hurt.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
I think with Broner, your wish is probably, you know, a little bit closer to becoming a reality because
at
of all this outside the ring
Mayweather.
Shit. Yeah. Fuck, I just thought of something, and I'm losing it.
Oh, God damn it. Well, we basically run through last week and this week for the most part, so whenever we need to part ways and wrap this up, just let me know, James, and we will.
Well, let's get a quick one, because I didn't even realize, but on Saturday is that Tyson Marquez-Giovanni Segura fight.
Oh, shit. Yes. Thank you for reminding me.
Schedule right before we got on, and I forgot that I knew that was coming up. I didn't know it was this weekend.
Yes. Thank you for reminding me, because I actually did want to talk about that. So, well, take us into that shit. Break it down. Do it.
Well, I mean, I'm curious what you got on this, because, you know, I've both of these guys have lost recently, and Segura has kind of come back to earth after, you know, his two big wins against Ivan Calderon, and some people even had him on the fringes of pound-for-pound list. You know, he's obviously a pretty big puncher for a small guy, and Marquez has been in a couple really exciting, just action-filled fights, you know, bloodbath with Luis Concepcion a couple years ago. So
yeah.
I don't really have any take on this. You know, I don't watch a lot of the smaller weight fighters, mostly because they're not on. I mean, you know how I roll. I'm an HBO and Showtime, and that's it. I will actually go out of my way to watch, you know, bigger fights that aren't on the networks, and I have been an avid Friday Night Fights watcher for the last, you know, amount of years, despite your mockery.
Well,
of that, but, you know, so I have
yeah,
seen
well,
both
last
these guys
night
fight,
when
but...
the, well, last night when the Fox Sports 1 card was going on, I got, like, five separate tweets from different people saying, I bet you James Foley's not watching this shit. And you know what the fucking
Dude,
funny part
I'm
was?
I'm marathoning
really
Breaking Bad with my wife, man. What am I going to do?
Well, the funny shit was I wasn't really watching it either. So that was the ultimate irony, I guess. But I don't even know what irony is, so I'm assuming that's irony. But back to Giovanni Segura, yeah. I don't think there's any question that however long the fight lasts and however long it goes, it's probably going to be exciting. You know, I was a big champion of the Brian Valoria versus Tyson Marquez fight going in.
Yeah.
Because I basically was like, this has got to be a good fight. There's no way it's not going to be a good fight. It did wind up being a good fight, even though a little one-sided for Valoria.
It was an awesome fight.
That had the
Roman Gonzalez Estrada fight on the undercard, right?
Yep. Yeah, that was the Wealth TV card that I've been pissing and moaning about for the last year because it was good.
Right, yeah, that
was
great. Was
like
your boy Larry Holmes on the commentary.
All, yeah, it was five straight fights that all kicked ass. It was... They were good. It was awesome. But, yeah, I don't think there's any question that however long it lasts, it's going to be good. There are two guys that tend to be in pretty good fights. They both hit fairly hard. I think that, and it's just a guess, Tyson Marquez can be lured into a brawl. You know, probably he seems to me like the type of guy who would like to box and would like to be a little bit more on his back foot and kind of jab a little bit more, but he can be lured into brawls when he starts getting hit. As we kind of saw against Brian Valoria, Marquez tries to kind of like dart in and out, but Brian Valoria is a really good counter-punching, like, power puncher. And that's what happened was he kept getting, not, like, just clocked when he was trying to dart in and out, and so he wound up going down a bunch of times. But against Giovanni Segura, I don't think there's any question that Segura is going to be trying to press the issue. And on top of that, he can crack.
Patrick, let's not forget that was also Larry Holmes on the commentary that night on the Segura-Marquez fight when he was pulling out. Do you remember that?
Valoria Marquez?
Valoria Marquez, yeah. He was doing the commentary for Wealth TV. And he was saying... you know, he basically predicted in that one crazy round that Marquez was going to end up getting dropped. Because Marquez dropped Valoria, didn't he? And then Valoria came back and had Marquez on the ropes. I can't remember if he knocked him down.
I don't think that he knocked down Valoria, but he had him hurt.
He had him pretty hurt, and he was
really close to going down. Yeah,
and Holmes
really
had kind of like predicted
down.
That Valoria was going to turn the tide back, and then when it happened, do you remember that? He was just like, I told you. He's like, I know this game. And he spent like the rest of the broadcast just like telling his broadcast partners that they were idiots for not listening to him. Was subsequently never seen on Wealth TV again.
Yeah, his trademark lisp. I'm from Eastern PA. I told you I know this game. Yeah. Yeah. That was solid shit. That whole card was... It was gold. I downloaded
that card
like in one big ass file not long after it happened, and I was like, I'm cherishing this. It was good.
Dude,
I watched that
card multiple times. Sound off, sound on, black and white.
Yeah, in the dark, not in the dark, outside. in a boat.
Night,
you know,
vision goggles.
On a bridge. Green eggs and ham. Yeah, I fucking watched that shit all over.
And this card, this one on Saturday is going to be on Univision, which is pretty much available on every cable system.
Yeah, it's over here. I think it's being on Unimas, but it's but it also can be that's also carried in some areas, I think, by different channels. So it's really tough because sometimes even in my area, it's on different channels or they're switch. So anyways, if you can, I would try to find a feed or a stream or a channel or whatever if you can for that fight, because it should be good. I think.
And I'm thinking
Giovanni
that's
gonna
that'll be starting right after this, the Golovkin fight. So I think it's definitely worth flipping over for that, because that's probably on paper looks like going to be the best fight of the weekend.
I would guess so, yeah. And plus, on top of that, I think Giovanni Segura is probably, I don't want to say on his last leg. I mean, Tyson Marquez, you know, he's kind of not on in the greatest shape either, I would say, in terms of what he's gone through. He's still fairly young, but, you know, the losses that he had were pretty significant and kind of damaging. Regardless, I think Giovanni Segura, I think he's at 31 or 32. For a little guy, that's not young at all. So I think that it might be kind of a last stand type of thing for him. And I've seen a lot of people picking Segura by knockout, and I think it really could go either way. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's totally an either-way fight. I mean, I think there's a lot of doubts about Segura, you know, and even the wins over Calderon have kind of, you know, maybe come under question a bit. How much did Calderon have left, and was he always kind of vulnerable once his legs slowed down? You know, was his chin, you know, maybe just couldn't take those kind of punches? And Segura hasn't looked good since then, and he got TKO'd by Valoria too, didn't he? In a more one-sided fight than Marquez. So, right? I think he lost to Valoria last year.
Yes. Yeah, it was like, I think, 2011 or whatever, so it was about like 2 years ago. But yeah, Marquez was actually doing decently against Valoria in spots, and Segura didn't really look that good. So,
but sometimes that's the ingredients for just a great, you know, bloodbath action kind of fight, is two guys, Segura's case, who's probably definitely on, you know, on the downside, and Marquez, who's taking a lot of punishment and, you know, maybe at their best was a little bit of a level beneath Segura.
Yeah, for sure. And I remember after the Calderon fights, you know, Giovanni Segura was getting serious, you know, talk behind him for, like, you know, pound-for-pound consideration. Not that anybody gives a fuck about pound-for-pounds, you know, but...
No, we hate that shit.
Fuck that shit. But he was getting serious consideration for, you know, best fighter in the world type of stuff. And I'm not saying that that was wrong, but I do think that you do kind of have to look at the Calderon wins, you know, in perspective, like you were basically just alluding to. So I think that that's also a question. But at the end of the day, Segura can punch. He can whack. So that's going to be an issue for Marquez if Marquez isn't careful. But yeah, point being, it should be a good fight.
Definitely.
Well, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I wanted to, but totally forgot.
I know you wanted to.
Anyway.
I didn't want you to, you know, have any regrets.
Thank you. Saving me once again, Foley. Well, let's wrap this shit up then, and end it about a half hour early.
All right, so, man. Thank you, sir.
Well, thank you. And, yeah, we'll be on next week. We'll work on seeing if we're going to get a guest, and if we do, who. Although I think that I have an idea anyway. Since it's going to be recapping a Golovkin fight, I have a pretty good idea of who we should have on. We'll check it out, though. Anyway. We'll see everybody.
Yeah, we know some people who have some pretty big boners for Golovkin.
Oh yeah, if not, we can find them. Yeah, exactly. And if not, we can find them. We'll seek them out. So, yeah, we'll be on next week. So everybody, thanks for joining us once again. James Foley, badlefthook.com. Check out his stuff there, and queensberryrules.com is the site that I write for. Check us out. We'll see you next week. Thanks, everybody. Take it easy.